And you're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI and WBAI.org on the web from the CD Somewhere in There by Teokasin Ghost Horse, the host of First Voices Indigenous Radio Friday mornings at 6 a.m. Stay tuned for Living for the City with me, Michael G. Haskins. Welcome to Living for the City. Living for the City is a program focusing on telling stories, our histories, our perspectives of local communities throughout our area and beyond. If you have lived in New York City for any length of time, you know how difficult it is to get the media to report about a subject in depth, tell the truth, or even cover an issue in certain circumstances. We examine those very issues, especially dealing with the real estate industry and the very powerful lobbyists. We look at housing, land, air, and water use, including sunlight, and we do so truthfully, accurately, and without any conflicts of interest. My name is Michael G. Haskins. I'm the program host and executive producer, and the senior producer is Jillian Jonas. Jillian Jonas. Before I go further, I want to introduce you to the concept of Sankofa. Sankofa is a word in the Akan, Twi, and Fante languages of Ghana that translates to retrieve, or literally go back and get, and just like the Sankofa bird that is looking back over its shoulder to see where it has come from, we look back in history to see where we've come from, so we can understand how we exist in this current moment and help us chart a course for the future. And on this day in peace and social justice history, July 21, 1925, the so-called monkey trial ended in Dayton, Tennessee, with a high school teacher, John T. Scopes, convicted of violating a state law against teaching Darwin's theory of evolution. It was considered illegal to contradict the Bible's description of God's seven-day creation of the world in Genesis. The trial pitted two of America's leading advocates as the opposing lawyers, William Jennings Bryan, thrice the Democratic presidential candidate, 1896, 1900, and 1908, and the state's prosecutor, Clarence Darrow, a lawyer famous for representing the underdog at the defense table. Referred to as the trial of the century. Even before it began, it was the first trial ever broadcast on radio. Bryan became ill and died shortly after the trial's end. The conviction was later overturned by Tennessee's Supreme Court. Interest in the trial by the populace and the media, and the heat in the courtroom prompted Judge John T. Ralston to move the trial outdoors to the courthouse lawn. Bryan himself was called as a witness on the literal interpretation of Scripture. Attorney General Thomas Stewart, in response to Darrell's questioning, asked, quote, "What is the meaning of this harangue?" Unquote. To show up fundamentalism, shouted Mr. Darrow, to prevent bigots and ignoramuses from controlling the educational system of the United States. And that closes the quote there. Mr. Bryan sprang to his feet, his face purple, and shook his fist in Darrow's face. Quote, "To protect the word of God from the greatest atheist and agnostic in the United States." I usually try to bring you two pieces of Sankofa moments looking back in history, but this one was pretty long, so I'm going to save this last one. It's pretty important, I think, but I don't want to take any more time from my guests that are standing by. So if you won't mind, you all won't mind, I may have time later on in the hour to give you or share another excerpt of This Day in Peace and Social Justice History. This is Living for the City over WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. And my name is Michael G. Haskins, welcoming you and thanking you for tuning in. This is a commercial, free, and listener-supported radio station. You see, this is how it's done. I'm sorry, I have to do this. You cannot just take one pass at mentioning this station, what it is, its history, and how important all of you are in its 61-year commercial-free history in the center of the FM dial in New York. It is very, very important, and I will hopefully remember to follow this up again and mention our pledge line and how you can support the station financially. All right. Since the Bloomberg administration, land use and development in Brooklyn have transformed the borough into something many of us no longer recognize. No one should ever forget Bloomberg's zoning on steroids, really, when he targeted the working class, mostly immigrant communities of Greenpoint and Williamsburg, and what the neighborhoods now represent. These days, Mayor de Blasio has focused with a vengeance on Brooklyn neighborhoods of his own choice, aided and abetted by local council members Steve Levin and soon-to-be comptroller Brad Lander in Gowanus and Lori Combo in Crown Heights and the Botanic Garden. Because things are moving so fast, Living for the City decided to spotlight the areas together to compare and contrast their experiences fighting City Hall. With me is Marlene Donnelly, a founding member of Friends and Residents of Greater Gowanus, F-R-O-G-G, and one of our most frequent and favorite guests of all time. In sports, they call it GOAT. And that's no disrespect, Alicia. It's just the greatest of all time. Alicia Boyd, founder of the Movement to Protect the People, or MTOP. Alicia, I hope you didn't mind that.
No, I didn't.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome to you, Alicia and Marlene. Thank you both for being on the program. I appreciate you being here. Marlene?
Oh, okay.
Okay, Marlene.
Alicia and I have got to know each other over the past 6 months on some of the sharing information and action on what's been going on.
Good.
We are both focusing on different rezonings.
Right.
But there's a lot in
common. I'm very happy to hear that, Marlene.
I do want to just introduce, because you said the Bloomberg had such large rezonings. The Gowanus rezoning is much larger than any Bloomberg rezoning. It's 80 blocks. It is
okay,
huge.
See, I didn't even know that.
And
my
it's inviting 22 to 30-story towers all up and down 4th Avenue and the Gowanus on the banks of the canal.
Well, listen, Marlene.
Something that doesn't exist anywhere in our community at all.
That's why we have you on, and I'm going to start with you. Let's start with a shared experience that both communities objected to remote-only public hearings necessitated by the pandemic, or were they? Can you talk about this and how there appears to be different standards? We'll start with you, Marlene, and then come right over to Alicia Boyd and her experiences.
Yeah, it was really upsetting that they moved forward with this rezoning during the lockdown where we could not meet in person. We have a state law, public meeting law, where it says we are allowed to attend meetings and participate in meetings and listen and watch our elected people make decisions. And we were all cut off from that as a part of this process of the moving to a Zoom hearings, which we've discovered as this has played out are really an attempt to muzzle the community, to cut off our sharing of expression of our voice and our concerns. And we were pushing really hard that we wanted that opportunity because we do feel there's so much that is very wrong going on here in Gowanus with this rezoning, and we have not been allowed that opportunity to express ourselves in the ways communities express themselves at open public hearings.
Okay, well, we'll come back. We have so much to talk about with you in reference to Gowanus. Alicia Boyd, what about the public hearings and how do you feel about that in your organization?
It was supposed to be these two, we filed the lawsuit and Gowanus filed the lawsuit for the same thing, demanding that an in-person hearing be held. In the case of Gowanus, they got their in-person hearing going in front of the same judge, Judge Catherine Levine. She stated very clearly that she agreed with the petitioners that an in-person hearing should happen. She schedules one and then closes that deal with the Gowanus, but when it came to the Crown Heights and Flatbush community, she decided that that was not something that we were entitled to.
Oh, wow.
So,
really?
Because we are a predominantly black community. And the funny thing was is that not only are we a predominantly black community, but we're also a poor community. And so our residents actually have even less access to, you know, being able to go online and be a part of that process, an online process hearing. But we were denied that opportunity. The judge decided that we were not entitled to it, but the Gowanus community
could you object? Hold on for a second, Marlene. Let me just follow this up. Were you able to object at all, or it was just that was what the judge decided and that was it?
Well, during the hearing, the judge refused to allow us to actually produce witnesses, to make objections, to cross-examine witnesses. She basically stated that because we were pro se litigants, and these are people who are not represented by attorneys, that we didn't really have any rights to litigate this issue in the court of law.
Okay. Marlene, you were going to say?
Well, I was just going to say what we were actually given. We did not negotiate for this, what took place, and we don't actually call it an in-person hearing that took place, because the way the city and the judge organized this, we withdrew from those negotiations. We were not party to them because we did not agree with any of them. They were really whittling away at our you know, the rights of communities across this entire city and what they did. We were ushered. We had a park that was set up with computer screens outside for people to watch what was going on, and anybody who spoke was ushered into a indoor space in total isolation from the community, got exactly 2 minutes to speak. They ran the timer went up, and they cut it off entirely, just in the most rude way that would never have occurred in an in-person hearing.
Right.
A true in-person hearing, usually you had 2 minutes, they gave you a two-minute warning, and they let you close within the following minute.
Mm-hmm.
But here, this was entirely, they just cut the signal, and you were out. You did not even get to have a timer when you were sitting there in this room with a camera focused on you. It was just the most bizarre situation that they set up. And they called this a public hearing,
right,
where we were excluded. When you spoke, you were excluded from the people in your community. And for many people like myself who are not great public speakers and feel really uncomfortable in those situations, having your community there helps people articulate their concerns a little better.
You know,
and all of these things, we were just completely denied. Mm-hmm. It was not what you would call an in-person hearing.
Right.
We were just allowed access to a facility that gave you to participate
that
in the Zoom hearing.
That allowed you 120
and
seconds.
And that's something that Alicia's community was denied. Mm. I mean, there's extra resources
for people
who don't have resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people do not have access to online and the equipment that you need to do this all the time.
Okay, so I'm speaking with Marlene Donnelly, founding member of Friends and Residents of Greater Gowanus, along with Alicia Boyd from MTOP, Movement to Protect the People. Marlene, what's the status with the Gowanus rezoning, particularly in regards to the community board?
Well, our community boards have met, and our rezoning touches two community boards because it is quite extensive. Community Board 2 voted first, and they voted unanimously against it, and it wasn't, I actually forget the vote. It was Community Board 2 voted no. Community Board 6 voted for it, but they issued a 14-page document itemizing all that's very wrong with this rezoning, as if a yes vote is going to help them get any of that stuff addressed, which is really bizarre because it never is. We know that community boards, it's not just advisory, but when they do make these statements, nobody ever looks back at it. And the reality is there's that much wrong that they even came up with this 14-page document.
Mm-hmm.
There's supposed to be a borough board meeting that's not going to take place because it's summertime and they don't meet in the summer, but it was scheduled at the end of this month. And then there's the city planning hearing a week from today on the DEIS, which we have very real issues with that we've been working on.
So, Marlene, what does the community, especially activists like yourself, like Frog, FROGG, Friends and Residents of Greater Gowanus, what do you think about these conditions? Are you uncomfortable? Or do you feel that they're okay?
Most concerned about is our environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
Gowanus is plagued with every level of environmental issue, and not just air quality that's being compounded by the particulate matter that we're being hit with right now from the fires, but it's bad air quality here in general. But we also have horrendous water quality. We have citizen science that measures the pathogen levels in our waters all across the city, and the Gowanus Canal has been in locations where it's not even near a sewage outlet, is spiking at over 24,000 particles per liter, which is more than the equipment can measure when it's supposed to be somewhere near 100. I mean, it's just so over the top at interim times. But the city can dump as much sewage they want into this canal and have the pathogen spike as high as they want and still call it clean, which is just appalling to all of us, as they going to load this with 20,000 new residents using toilets
right.
in the area.
It's appalling to all of us as we listen to you outline this now. And what about, the city is violating federal environmental laws as well.
get. So we have the EPA involved here, and the city has been in violation of Clean Water Act since it has been in place. There are federal consent orders against the city for being in violation, and because there's a particular one in place for Gowanus, the federal government is required to have oversight and participation in the assessment of the impacts of this rezoning, because the city is non-complying with clean water. Therefore, the federal government has to assess whether the rezoning will increase that non-compliance. And there's every indication that it was. So we've been working a lot with our elected officials and writing letters to every level of EPA on these matters. And we got a letter back from the EPA to our representative, Nydia Velasquez, last week, that where the EPA finally acknowledges that the data used on sewage flow in this DEIS is flawed. Mm. And they're now on record. Well, DEIS based on flawed data is not a legal DEIS. Mm-hmm. It can't become a legal EIS.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we are actually challenging that we need a formal complete assessment by the EPA, by FEMA, by the Army Corps, because of the conditions here in Gowanus, and then they're required to under the law. And then we find out that the city knew of this when they first started a rezoning for a small part of Gowanus under Bloomberg in 2008, where they're going to bring in HUD for one of the big developments for the affordable housing development, HUD money. And they acknowledged in that initial draft EIS that because of that, they would need federal oversight under what are called the NEPA rules,
mm-hmm.
which is an environmental assessment. So the city knew that, but yet they bring this much bigger rezoning, and they avoid that entirely. So we're really concerned that here it is, the city is trying to avoid the legal requirements that they knew of in pushing forward this rezoning in this very fast time frame. Without doing the due diligence.
So
even people who want this rezoning should
right.
really realize that the DEIS, you can't have a legal ULURP on an illegal EIS.
Marlene Donnelly, founding member of Friends and Residents of Greater Gowanus. Also with me is Alicia Boyd, founder of Movement to Protect the People. Alicia, all right. What is happening now? We've been talking about this for some time. What's happening with the monster on Franklin Avenue? What's going on there?
Well, they had the hearing at the community board, and the community board had
and
a
outline
unanimous.
It quickly, just briefly for our listeners, our new listeners who maybe don't know what the monster is.
Oh, the monster is a two-tower, 11 buildings being built along the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens. It's about 450 feet tall, and it was supposed to cast shadows, about 5 hours of shadows on BBG and on the Jackie Robinson playground. There was a determination after we filed the lawsuit that this development would have a negative impact upon the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens, that over half of their plant life would probably be destroyed within 10 years, and that all the plant life in the Jackie Robinson playground would probably be destroyed as a result of the shattering impact. The Department of City Planning first stated that there was no negative impact that was going to happen as a result, but we found and uncovered a memo from the Parks Department that said otherwise. The Parks Department said that there would be serious damage. And then eventually, once we filed our lawsuit, the City Planning Department decided to change its position and did state very clearly on the record that it would have detrimental effects to the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens. However, they still certified this application. It is now going through the land use review process, just like in the Gowanus case. It's been in front of Community Board 9, and Community Board 9 said no. It went in front of Eric Adams, and Eric Adams has kind of stalled and not given his position, even though he's supposed to. And now it's going in front of the City Planning Commission. Next Thursday on the 29th, July 29th. There's a public hearing at the City Planning Commission. We're encouraging people to come out to that particular hearing where the City Planning Commission will hear from the public about this project.
Now, the last time you were here in June, Alicia Boyd, you told us about some really quite despicable behavior from a local judge. What's going on there? And are you filing any kind of ethics complaints against her?
Yeah, our judge, Judge Levine, was the same judge in the Gowanus case. Like I stated before, when we went to our preliminary injunction hearing, she basically tied my hands and we could not do anything. We could not present witnesses. We could not testify. We could not cross-examine witnesses. We could not even make objections on the record. And she continued to state the reason why is because we were pro se litigants. So we filed an ethics complaint to the state because there is a state entity that's supposed to review judges' behaviors. We filed a complaint to the administrative judge at the Brooklyn Supreme Court asking Judge Levine to recuse herself and because we no longer want to go in front of her. I mean, it was just blatant racism, sexism. I mean, when you tell a person who has every right to present a case in front of your court system that they cannot because of their status. And then we eventually will be filing a motion asking her to recuse herself. We also went to the second department and we are appealing her decision, the preliminary injunction hearing decision, where she denied our right to have an in-person hearing.
Now, if Mayor de Blasio has publicly said he opposes any building that would affect the Botanic Garden, how is the monster still being discussed then?
Well, that was the irony of this. We know that once an application is certified, it has a 99% chance of passing because the people who certify it, which is the City Planning Commissioners, are also the ones who vote on it.
Right.
So it's really weird to us for all of these public entities, including the mayor and our city council person and the Speaker of the House, all saying that they don't support this project, and yet the project is going through this Uniform Land Use Review procedure. Because not every project that the Department of City Planning, somebody submits to the Department of City Planning, gets certified. It's a discretionary action. They don't have to certify it. So if you really don't support it, why are you certifying it? Why are you going through the process?
Right.
And we believe that somewhere along the line they're going to change what it is that they're proposing. We're not going to be able to know what that change is until after they make the decision.
Right. Yep.
And that's our belief. But we can't figure out any other rationale for them going through an entire process just to say no to it.
Right. Well, Marlene Donnelly and Alicia Boyd, I have you on together. I'm going to bring these two groups, two areas together. Are there similarities between the two cases, do you think? Marlene, what do you think? And then Alicia. Marlene? What do you think? Did we lose you, Marlene? All right. Perhaps we have. Can we go over now to Alicia?
Well, the similarities are that these are both in communities that people felt that were next to resources that developers feel would make the rezonings marketable. In the Gowanus case, they felt like it being right on top of a canal, that you would be able to build along this canal and actually talk about it as a, you know, like a Venice canal. Like this, you now as a property owner or a resident can have access to this nice waterway, this view of this waterway. And so, and in obviously in our case, you know, it was the views of the park and the garden. You know, you could right along the perimeter, oh, you get these garden views. So these both of them have that same kind of component, and that is something that the real estate industry wants and feels that there could be a very quick turnover as far as profit. So that's one of the similarities. The other similarity is that, you know, both communities didn't want it. There was really, you know, one is a private developer, and that's in our case. The other one is the city, which is in the Gowanus case. But there was really no input from the community about this plan. In the Gowanus case, they did all of this planning and review and listening to the community and listening sessions, but then they didn't take any of the suggestions. So in the Gowanus case, even though there was this appearance of community input, they didn't take any suggestions. And then that's the same thing that obviously happened in our case, up here in Brooklyn, Botanic Gardens. There was never any input from the community. It was never, you know, okay, let's see what would happen. What are your suggestions? What do you think would actually be something that could work for the community? We were never given that opportunity. Mm. And the Gowanus community were never given that, even though they were supposed to have been given the opportunity. None of their suggestions, literally none of their suggestions, were put into writing.
Well, Alicia Boyd from Movement to Protect the People, I do believe we have Marlene Donnelly back with us.
Oh,
Marlene,
great.
I asked Alicia and you before we lost you for a moment, are there similarities between the two cases? What do you think, Marlene?
Well, Alicia was talking about the community outreach. There was a lot of community meetings that took place here, and that we were set up to say that, yeah, if you participate and put in your time and meet on a monthly basis, constantly going on with these meetings, that the community voice will be reflected in the rezoning. When Bill de Blasio was our councilman, and he was first pushing for rezoning in Gowanus, the first project that he had pushed for was for 8 stories. That one didn't go through. It was turned down by BSA. And then he pushed through the second one, which was 12 stories. Then they had conversations about maybe in our community meetings needing to go to 14 stories, or maybe even 18 stories at one meeting. And then they come around with a rezoning that's 22 to 30 stories out of the blue. So, I mean, this is the way those meetings progressed. And we put in a lot of time talking about a lot of important details, even the things that, I mean, Gowanus is a manufacturing district that supports a lot of industries in our city. And one of the things that they really got wrong is how much they're displacing the music industry that really uses these old warehouses and places all over Gowanus, not only for recording studios, but there's a whole area where they have rehearsal studios, because musicians need to practice together, and you're not allowed to practice in residential areas for music. You have to be in manufacturing districts. So there are facilities set up here where you can rent 4 months to practice to get ready for a performance. So all of these things that the people in the arts and the music industry went to all these meetings to say, we need to protect this, we need to do this. And there's nothing in the rezoning to do that. It's all displacement. It's all displacement. Forget about the environmental issues, just the reality of what we're doing and transferring space that was manufacturing down here in the swamp, in the flood zone and areas that is currently being used in a very useful way to support all the activities in our city, is going to be replaced with 22 to 30 story houses. Towers for residential use.
I want to, before we run out of time, we are almost at the end of our time together, but I wanted to ask you, Alicia Boyd, about the Save Associated campaign. I remember that from last year or the beginning or early this year. I think it was last year, the Save Associated campaign. Can you talk a bit about that before we get some contact information from you both?
Yes, the Save Associated is a supermarket in our community, the Crown Heights community, and that area had been targeted. That particular development project had been brought up in 2014, along with the land along the perimeter of the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens, because there was a plan to rezone the entire community, which we were able to stop. And the associated got a 5-year lease, and now their lease is up. And the developers wanted to close down the associated and just remove it and then just bring in a more high-end, supermarket under a new building. We were able to successfully campaign against the developer, going to his house in Park Avenue as well as his house in Connecticut. And now the supermarket is coming back with a 15-year lease once a new development project is put in place. However, in the meantime, we will have a food desert in our community, so we are now doing another action to try to put some pressure on our elected officials to figure out ways in which the seniors in our community and the elderly people and the people who are on set incomes can be able to access reasonably affordable food via either transportation or, you know, pop-up stores or whatever. We're trying to do that. We're having a rally this Saturday in front of the supermarket that's off of Nostrand and Empire Boulevard. So if people want to come out and support us, that would be great. It's starting at 11 o'clock, and we will be handing out some free T-shirts and, you know, encouraging people to come out and join us and raise their voices. And then also we're trying to remind people to come to the hearing at 120 Broadway in Manhattan on Thursday for the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens rezoning project that's now in front of the Department of City Planning Commission.
Well, excellent. Going to wrap up our conversation right now. I'm so appreciative of having both of you on, usually one or the other, but having you on together was fantastic. Marlene Donnelly, any contact information or any upcoming activities that you want to tell our listeners about before you leave?
The most important thing is, like Alicia said, these are moving forward. We, for Gowanus, there's the city planning hearing next Wednesday, and you can go in person. You do have to wear a mask. We appreciate if people will participate and come in and voice their concerns. They can also submit things in writing, which is also helpful. And I hope people listening will consider making those efforts. Our contact information is we have a website, Friends and Residents, on the site. We are also working along with a group called Voice of Gowanus, which is a lot of other entities in our neighborhood who have come together on this. So you can check on their website. They are posting additional action this coming week. Appreciate.
Okay, so just give the website once, please.
It's frogbrooklyn.org.
F-R-O-G-G.
Yes.
Okay, .org. And Alicia Boyd, how do we get in touch?
MTOP is MTOPP.org. You can contest our email address is info@MTOPP.org. Or you can call 718-703-3086. Again, 718-703-3086.
Alicia Boyd, thank you so very much. Marlene Donnelly, thank you so very much. Thank you both.
And thank you, too, for the opportunity. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks so much for having us.
Okay. This is WBAI's Living for the City. And I'm Michael G. Haskins. We'll be back with some visions. 25 years. How about that? It's upcoming over WBAI. Thank you. This is Living for the City over WBAI 99.5 FM. And I mentioned at the top of the show that this is a commercial-free, listener-supported radio station on the air for 61 years, made possible by listeners just like you. Please consider supporting this station so that we can continue bringing you information like you just heard with Alicia Boyd, founder of Movement to Protect the People, MTOP, and Marlene Donnelly, founding member of Friends and Residents of Greater Gowanus. We talk about land use issues here in the city as it is transforming right under our feet. We talk about other things too. We have that Sankofa looking back in history, the moments in time. We cannot go forward unless we know where we've come from. We just heard from Duke Ellington and master recordings of his famous orchestra. And right now, we are listening to William Parker and Daniel Carter, Song for Roy. And this was back in 2014. And I think 2014, I was at that one, or maybe an earlier one, with actually someone that I went to high school with who was playing in that band. So I welcome at this time, I'm very happy to welcome back to the broadcast that I do. This is not the first time that I've had this brother on, but I'm speaking of Raymond Nat Turner. He's a town crier, and among other things, he is one extraordinary and gifted poet. And Raymond, welcome to these airways. You're no stranger here, but it's been some time since you and I were on together. But welcome to Living for the City.
Hey, man, what a pleasure to be back.
Yes, yes.
I'm grateful to be back. Oh, my grateful goodness. To hear your voice.
It's been much too long. You know, we used to do this on a regular basis, Raymond. You would come on, you would send me your poems, I'd read some of them, have you on. I really enjoyed that. And the listeners did too, I like to think.
Well, you got too good at it. I would listen to you and see how it should be done.
Oh, I think not, my brother. But listen, Raymond, tell us what you've been up to. What is coming up? I mentioned the Vision Festival 25, the 25th year of the Vision Festival. Tell us about the festival, and you're going to be in this festival. What's happening? What's going on? What are you going to be doing?
Okay. I'm getting a little bit of an echo in my ear. It's kind of like somebody parodying me.
Hmm. It sounds good over the air.
Okay. But let's start off appropriately then. Okay. So I did this just a moment ago, and this is, I salute you, and this is for you. And one, that man, that brother, he's the bad mother. Huh, shut your mouth. But I'm talking about Michael G, FCC, too. Are you wearing capes and tights these days? Do you fly? Do you have X-ray vision? Are you able to leap city skyscrapers in a single bound? Do you board trains at 3 a.m? Do you run radio stations from kitchen tables during superstorms? Do you run them from home during pandemics? If you do, I salute you.
Wow. Raymond, I'm really quite blushing. And you know, when we talked earlier, and you mentioned Superstorm Sandy, I was so impressed because that is exactly what happened. And for you, I don't even think we knew one another at that time, but you knew that I was in Harlem with a laptop when Sandy shut the station down. What year was that? 09, whatever it was.
Accurate.
10 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. Over 10 years ago, we were able to continue broadcasting until obviously the power was shut down at the Empire State Building. Now, years later, in 2020, during this pandemic, being able, knowing that the infrastructure, that is to say, the technology had gotten a lot better, we could do so much more, so we didn't have to stop broadcasting, but we were able to keep everyone safe, and that's what I'm so impressed about. But that's in a sense.
That's exactly right, yeah. And that's why I wrote that.
Well, it's much appreciated. So now tell us about Vision 25. I'm excited to hear about that and you doing what you do, the upstage and all of that. Tell us all about it, please.
Okay. This is the 25th annual Vision Festival, and it begins tomorrow at Pioneer Works in Brooklyn. And people can get more information by going to www.artsforart.org. And this year's festival's theme is Breaking Free, Coming Home. And it's so ironic because I had been out in California for about 18 months, and we had sent 40 boxes back to New York, and we were looking to meet up with our boxes, and here we are 18 months later.
Oh my goodness, really? Wow.
Yeah. And so I'll be at the Vision Festival this Sunday at 6 p.m. and that's going to be in at the Clement, which is at 114 Suffolk Street in Manhattan.
Yep, I know where that is. I certainly do. So you're going to be there. The entire upstage is going to be there. Upstage. Upstage. Yeah.
we could do that too. Yes. But it's Upsurge NYC.
Upsurge NYC. Okay. Yeah. So that's going to be happening as well. Who are some of the highlighters, headliners that are going to be there? Highlighters and headliners are going to be there this year.
Well, Amina Claudine Myers is receiving a lifetime award, a lifetime achievement award. I think it may be tomorrow night or maybe Friday. David Murray is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. William Parker is always worth seeing and hearing. James Blood Omer.
James Blood Omer. Now, see, folks, you have got what a lineup! Oh my God, I didn't know all that was happening.
Yeah, he's on the same night I'm on.
Okay,
and Abby O'Doo of The Last Poets is on.
Oh, yeah. So as Kenny Downing would say, everybody is going to be there. Oh, that sounds fantastic. Yes, so, how can people How can people get tickets or find out more about Vision Festival 25?
www.artsforart.org/visionfestival.
artsforart.org.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you've been gracious, as you always are, with your time. Is Ziga going to be there as well?
That's a good question. I think she will be. But on this is a solo.
I got you.
Yeah, this is one of the.
Well,
yeah, I've done a couple of those for Arts for Art, and you know, one was a tribute to Amiri Baraka, which was one of my favorites. Yeah, it's crazy about Amiri.
Yeah. Amiri Baraka has such an impact on so many of us. So many of us. It is absolutely wonderful. Well, I appreciate you being on the program today, telling us about the Vision Festival, this 25th anniversary, and you've given us information about the festival in general, but how can people find out about what you're doing and new projects? I know you're in the Black Agenda Report, but give us that piece of contact information so we could find out exactly about you and your prolific writing.
Okay. I think the latest thing that we've been doing is on YouTube. And it's called An Intimate Evening with the Town Crier. And if folks go to YouTube and just go to An Intimate Evening with the Town Crier, they can find a series that we did while we were out in California. It's at youtube.com/ZIGILOW. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I think folks have gotten that piece of information. So, again, it's much appreciated you being here and talking about Vision and what you're going to be doing in just a few days at Vision Festival 25. Raymond, now turn.
Yeah, and I have.
Go ahead.
I have a piece that I like to share.
Oh, please. Oh, by all means. We have a full 3 minutes left. Go.
Okay. It's called Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. Unless you listening to loud music, shoveling snow, or on a phone or a car, Black Lives Matter. Unless you breaking up a fight or your brake light's broken, Black Lives Matter. Unless you a Chicago child unschooled in Mississippi apartheid, unless you a man not laughing at unfunny jokes and looking up from red mud into steely blue gray eyes or resisting rapists coming after your mama, sister, daughter, wife. Black Lives Matter. Unless you smoking a cigarette or making a turn, unless you're a child scoring sugary snacks in the Sunshine State, unless you unhoused and have healthy reactions to homelessness and its insanity, any city, Black Lives Matter. Unless you're a doctor describing decent care to mingle a medicine men from your ICU bed, Black Lives Matter. Unless you caught trying to breathe between swastika of neo-teen and long white arm of the law.
Raymond Nat Turner on Living for the City. One more time, how can people find you and get in touch with your work?
That would be go to youtube.com/ZIGILOW. I-G-I-L-O-W.
You're going to wrap up the program for us, Raymond. Thank you so much for being here. All the best to you and to yours.
Thank you so much for having me, and have a great weekend, too.
All right. That's Raymond Nat Turner, the Town Crier. This is WBAI's Living for the City, and I'm your host, Michael G. Haskins. Upcoming, our news headlines.
For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Amara Evering with some brief news headlines. Today, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released data showing that Black life expectancy has dropped by 3 years, falling to 71 years and 10 months. The life expectancy among Latino Americans has also tumbled by nearly 3 years, now down to 78 years and 10 months. Comparatively, white life expectancy fell by 14 months, down to 77 years and 7 months. Life expectancy has been increasing gradually every year for the past several decades. However, in the past year, life expectancy overall has suffered its biggest decline since World War II. The CDC believes this data shows the devastating effect of the pandemic and racial disparities, saying, quote, "The decline in life expectancy between 2019 and 2020 can primarily be attributed to deaths from the pandemic. COVID deaths accounted for nearly 75% of the decline." Though much of this is COVID-related, increased drug overdoses also play a significant factor. Yesterday, a federal judge in Arkansas blocked a law that would have banned nearly all abortions in the state. U.S. District Judge Christine Baker prevented the enforcement of the law, which was set to take effect on July 28th. The measure that was eventually blocked was passed this year by a majority Republican legislature. The abortion ban would have only allowed abortions to be done in order to save the life of the mother in a medical emergency, but not for those who were impregnated in an incident of sexual violence or incest. Judge Baker labeled the law as, quote, "categorically unconstitutional" and successfully blocked the law. She wrote, quote, "Since the record at this stage of the proceedings indicates that women seeking abortions in Arkansas face an imminent threat to their constitutional rights, the court concludes that they will suffer irreparable harm without injunctive relief." Despite this successful block, the fight is not yet over for abortion rights. The U.S. Supreme Court in May agreed to take up a case about whether states can ban abortions, which could dramatically alter nearly 50 years of rulings on the procedure. Smoke from the bootleg fire in southern Oregon has spread to the East Coast, showing itself as a humid haze in many cities. This made the sun appear red to many on the East Coast. John Cristantello, meteorologist with the National Weather Service, said, quote, "The haze or smoke that you see is coming from the wildfires out in the west, and that's helping scatter the light, which leads to those more vivid sunrises and sunsets." New York State issued an air quality health advisory yesterday because of the high levels of fine particulate matter in the air. Back on the West Coast, however, conditions have become so severe that all lands managed by the Washington State Department of Natural Resources east of the Cascades will temporarily close to the public starting this week. Researchers have attributed this wildfire crisis and enormous heat wave to climate change. And as a deadly heat wave continues on the West Coast, officials in Oregon are calling for, quote, "social resilience" in order to cope with climate change and protect the most vulnerable. Portland, Oregon has seen record high temperatures in the past 2 days, and now the city is on track to hit 116 degrees. At least 115 people have suffered heat-related deaths.